I heard the story of the hummingbird, the first bird that was rescued by this lady, Mrs. Nihai, or Nihai, however her name is pronounced. She just died a couple of years ago, but this lady of cancer, but she was, when she started her, she's the one who started the Wild Bird Rescue Center. And it all started, so they say in the newspaper article, when her neighbor phoned her and said it was a small bird or a large moth that was lying on the driveway. And it was a hummingbird, so she went and got it and brought it into her house, and it learned to fly over the winter time. It had a broken wing, but it recovered over the winter, and it would fly around the house. In her basement, she had it. And it says in the article that the bird would taste freckles. In other words, I guess it saw the freckle on your arm and it would try to see what it tasted like. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
So. But I mean, that was the beginning of her Wild Bird Care Center that is now on Moody Drive, right? It's a unique place in Ottawa that we have here. And this is our backyard. And this baby robin is a fledgling. Couldn't fly, and I found it on the ground under its nest in our driveway, where the nest is, yesterday. And it had no mother nearby, so I was worried about it. And when it ran toward the road, I tried to put it back in the nest, and it jumped out. So it jumped out a second time, actually, and after I put it in again. So then we kept it overnight in a shoebox or basket, or whatever you want to call it, covered up and tied down so it couldn't jump out. And the box was tied together, not the bird, but anyway. We didn't give it any water or food overnight, but it just probably slept. And then in the morning, we called the bird care center, and they said just put it under the nest and wait for an hour and watch and see whether the mother comes. So sure enough, the mother came in 20 minutes and fed the baby. The baby didn't move after it was released until the mother came. Didn't move at all. Just stood there, and right where it jumped out of the basket. And after I let it loose to jump out, it jumped right away out of the basket. So then when the mother came and fed it, they both went further into the garage, which is open on the other end, and they then came into the backyard through the back end of the garage. The baby's here. And there were four robins in that nest. I have a short video of that, but I also have seen them. I saw the four of them at the time when they were really large, just a couple of days ago. It was just yesterday, wasn't it? Or was it? No, it wasn't yesterday. Because yesterday the heat pump man came. And with his helper, and they saw the robins in the nest. Two of them anyway. There were two in the nest yesterday. But there were four just a few days ago. So they're all learning to fly at this point. So maybe we'll get some more videos later. Okay. This is Ward Green, Rolf Ward Green at 5551 Joella Crescent, Osgood or Ottawa, Ontario. And it's Wednesday. I guess it's August 1st, is that right, Ann? No? August 1st, 2012. I'm just going to check with my watch. Yeah, Wednesday, August 1st, 2012. Good morning. I want to talk a little bit about the fret dressing that I've been working on for my Blue Ridge guitar. It's a Gibson Blue Ridge. Name Gibson is right there. I think you can see that, I hope. Let's see. Okay. Anyway, I don't want to go into a terrible amount of detail, but I'm looking at myself right now, and it's a little distracting. I'm seeing myself in the viewfinder on my camera, and I've never turned it around in that direction while I'm filming before, so sorry about that. Now, let me get you, I'll get used to that. Okay, so I've got some red magic marker that I put on the frets, which may be visible, but there's a lot of detail concerning how to set up a guitar, which I can't obviously cover in a short documentary like I'm doing right now. But what I have to do, or what they recommend doing, is straightening the neck, because some players play with a straight neck, and guitar neck, that is, and other guitar players play with the guitar neck lower in the middle, and that's called relief. But if you have relief when you're sanding it, you tend to sand, if you're using a long sander, for example, it spans the whole length, such as this, which is what I used. Now, I only put sandpaper on part of it because I didn't need it to be that long, and because the sandpaper was only so long. But what I did was I came in, and I had the biggest problem was I had wear on the first three frets, first four or more frets, but the worst wear was on the first three by far, and it was serious wear. If I didn't tend to it, then it's going to get unplayable, and then the frets are going to have to be replaced. So I decided now was not only a good time, but the time to do it. So, and also I lowered the nut, which is essentially the zero fret where the strings sit, and they're always touching the nut, hopefully, but I had to lower the first three strings because I wasn't able to play. And I still have a problem with the bottom three strings is what I lowered, and the first three strings, which is the narrowest gauge strings, I didn't adjust the nut because I wanted to dress the frets first. That once I lower the frets, then the nut will have to be lowered down again, because near the nut it's hard to press down the string if there's too big of a distance between the string and the fret. So the first fret once its height is determined relative to all the others, then the nut can be set. And the way of doing that is some players and some luthiers or guitar repair people do it by feel, and other people, they press down on the third fret between the second and third, and they just want a slight clearance of the string over the first fret. And I already had a slight clearance, but it was still hard to play on the first fret. I don't have very big calluses on my fingers, but and that's part of the problem, but the hardest strings on my fingers have been... it was very hard to play because of the lower three strings, and that got much better when I lowered the nut. So I'm thinking, I'm wishing actually, but I'm not really thinking. I'm wishing I could lower the first three narrowest strings a little lower, and I will be able to get them lower now, but the fret's going to be lower. So it's going to be relative to the fret. So I'm not sure I'm going to be able to improve it any, but I only had a very small clearance of about maybe 5/1000ths of an inch or something, or which is what they recommend, or even less. I'm not sure how much I had, but it was barely visible or clearly noticeable, because when you hold down the third fret, and right now the strings are not on it, as you can see, and I've taped off to protect it from the work I'm going to do next, which is to finish the frets now that I've done the sanding. But I have to check first to see if it's flat or if I can get it flat. And in doing that, in making it flat, one of the adjustments is the truss rod. In fact, that's the only way to easily control this relief in the middle, is to tighten the truss rod, straightening the neck and eliminating this curve where this is lower. The middle is lower. If there's relief, the middle is lower. That's called relief. And if you tighten the truss rod, which means turn it, in the case of most guitars, turn it clockwise. And for that purpose, I have a socket screwdriver, which I wasn't able to get much purchase on it, so I didn't really get it very tight. But it seemed to me it was straight enough, especially since I mainly wanted to remove material from the first three frets. I didn't want to have it too flat and remove material from all the frets. And this was yesterday when I was doing the work. I've been studying it prior to that so that I could prepare to do it. And now what I would like I've still got to do quite a bit more work on it. And I'm not sure whether I've even finished dressing the frets, but I've gotten rid of my wear marks on the first three frets. They're gone now. And in so doing, I also removed material, you can maybe see that, from some of the higher frets in here. And I also thought that it was very obvious that there was a backward bow or a high spot here on the lower strings, the heavier gauge strings, and that may explain why I had a bit of a buzzing on some of the on the heaviest string, on the low E. So now, because when I sanded it, the reason I say that is because when I sanded it, I noticed that, and also when I sighted by eye, I noticed that prior to the, when I was doing, prior to sanding, when I adjusted the truss rod, I noticed that I couldn't quite get this line, this, the high side, the high side, or the, actually the low side, physically low to the ground, but high pitched, the narrow gauge string side, I couldn't get that side to be completely flat. It was still having a bow in it, or an indentation or a low spot in the middle. And at the same time, I noticed that the lower string side, the heavy gauge string side, was actually high in the middle, because I could see that with my eye. And also I could see it when I lay a straight edge along it. Now, let me show you. Whoops. Just hit my microphone. It's not a good idea. Now, I'm hoping to do a song here, and that's why I've got these microphones set up the way I do. That was probably, I just saw a red distortion, or clipping? I want to turn that off. That may have been caused when I hit the microphone. Okay. Now, I think if I lay this along here, I can see that is actually, that's pretty good. It's pretty good right now. Pretty good. Now, I want to say one thing that I was meaning to say it a few seconds ago, and I forgot what it was. I measured all my frets with a dial caliper so that I lay the dial caliper up and down. I don't have it here. There's too many things I want to show you that I can't because of the sheer number of them. But the dial caliper, you can set it so that it does a depth measurement, and you just lay it on the fret, being very careful with it so as to not scratch anything. And then you just you put it in a position where you can drop the center pin of it down onto the, just touching the fretboard, and then you've measured the fret height. As long as you've got the caliper exactly parallel with the fretboard, or, you know, perpendicular this way, and the bottom of it parallel, then you're getting a measurement. So I wrote down all my measurements for all my frets in the middle, the high side, the heavy gauge string side, and the narrow gauge string side. So three measurements for each fret I wrote down. And it turns out that they're all between 0.037 or about 37 thousandths or 38 thousandths or something like that, up to about 50 thousandths or something. Now, I had some higher numbers up in this region. And in the very high frets, there's also some relief here where the extra high frets, because of the bending of notes, which causes the strings to move from their natural position, it being bent toward the middle, and because the fretboard is actually also curved, causes contact with the middle unless you shave off the top end so that you can bend notes in this region. So there's also some extra relief given here. And it gets greater as you go toward the sound hole. So it's a tapered relief. And that was already there. And I don't really have to play with that because I'm not removing much, hopefully, from this area here. I'm removing it mainly down here. And I'm not sure this guitar was set up properly, because I did have a little bit of buzzing. And it is an old guitar, but I'm not sure when it was last set up. I know the frets were not properly dressed, because they were flat, and a fret is supposed to be rounded. And you file them flat initially as much as you need to, but then you come back and you round them so that there's just a small flat on top, and that had not been done. So this is the first time in I don't know how long that this guitar has actually been dressed, but it may never have been, except at the factory, properly finished as far as the frets being rounded. So I had couple more things. I had a set of files. Let me show you that quickly. That I used to, because I don't have the. Now they'll always tell you have to have exactly a certain set of files to do your nut, to file the nut, so the strings can slip easily through the nut, but not be too loose, and not be too deep in the nut, etc., etc. But I've seen a great many different nuts, and there seems to be really no consensus, I would have to say, in its entirety, although some things are agreed on, and even those things I don't really agree with myself. For example, they say you have to have a certain set of files, and you have to have that exact set of files, but I've got here a set of five different shaped files. And I haven't yet filed the nut slots for the narrowest gauge strings. But I think that there's a way to do that with, say, a triangular edge file or something like that, too. Just want a little notch for those. But my nut's already been filed so deep that I'm going to have to take material off the nut if I'm going to use that tool. But the only tool I used was a needle file. And I just enlarged slightly and deepened slightly the holes I work in, the holes for the lowest gauge, the three lowest gauge strings,
And only one of which I think I enlarged because the string was too tight in that nut slot. Now, the other thing I did, I mean, but the thing is, the point is not the tools so much as the workman. That's more important by far than the tools. I mean, that's not to say any tool will do, but a workman can build his own tools. And that, in fact, that's what I've been doing. I built my own sander, my sanding block. Mind you, it has to be a perfectly straight edge. That I should have mentioned. This, whatever you use for sanding, has to be square, or at least flat, I mean, on the edge that has the sandpaper, or the side that has the sandpaper, whatever you're using. Some people use radius block, and I'll explain briefly what that is. But I use this, and because the neck is curved, I'm not able to use a wide flat block because it would flatten the neck completely, sanding only the middle where the crown of the curve was. Now this is a different kind of crown, the crown of the fretboard itself, not the crown of the individual frets, which is run perpendicular to the fretboard. So there's a crown in the down the middle of the fretboard as well as a crown on each individual fret in the middle of each individual fret that runs along. The crown runs along each individual fret. So there are a couple of meanings or applications of that word. But what I was doing was sanding and allowing this to just follow the contour so that because there's a crown in the center, I have to be keeping it, or I'm trying to keep it, you know, in the center, perpendicular in the center, and then as I go toward the sides and sanding, I'm sanding this way. I'm not sanding that way, but I'm sanding along this length and being careful not to hit the nut. But I'm not doing it right now to show you. I'm just doing it very roughly. But I do it with the guitar laying down, and I did it with the guitar laying between two chairs because I didn't have a workbench. But I had to take my glasses off so I could see, in some cases, what I was doing. And if I was working from a bit of a distance, I put my glasses on so I could see. But I can see well without my glasses close up. So when I was inspecting it, I took my glasses off. So I was working in a very comfortable way, but it might seem to be very awkward. And of course, you don't ever want to drop your guitar on the floor. So I wouldn't recommend this necessarily for just anybody, but for me, it was working. Now, I also made something that I needed. I made first I took a piece of, like this. This is made of maple, which is a hardwood and very stable or dry, after it's dry, when it's been drying for several years. Then I planed it on a jointer years ago, and I made it flat, straight and flat. So it's very straight. It's actually probably got a square edge, but I don't care about the squareness of it because I only care about the flatness of the surface on which the sandpaper lies. That's flat and straight. But I haven't had another piece of maple that was very thin. And I made a little jig out of that and drilled two holes, one in each end, 16 inches apart. And by doing that, I used it as a compass on a piece of card, Bristol, which I had a very large, long piece of. I had a large piece. I cut a long piece, longer than 16 inches from the large piece. Then I used my little jig with two holes as a compass with a nail in one end, and the other end was through a hole in one part of this, not this hole, but through another hole in the card. And by putting a pencil through the other hole, 16 inches away from the first hole with the nail, I traced out on the card that curve. So the other hole was 16 inches away, about there or something. By tracing that out on the card, then I had a line, pencil line, which I then cut with an X-Acto knife. So now I have a 16-inch radius, because that was the radius of my compass. 16-inch radius, that's the standard Gibson back in the days when they built the Blue Ridge. That was the Gibson standard. It was copied from Martin. The standard fret radius along the, it's of course supposed to be, while I'm sanding it, it's flat in this direction along the length, or relatively so. hopefully exactly flat if you're doing all the frets, but if I'm doing what I'm doing, it's got a slight bit of relief, and it had inverse or negative relief, or it had a bump on one side and relief on the other. So I'm doing what I can with this neck to get it improved. And I don't want to take too much off because my frets are already very thin or low in height, being only 0.047 or 0.04 or 0.047 or 0.05 or something in that range. Now, they don't change randomly, suddenly up and down generally between, you know, it's a gradual. It starts out being 0.04 or 0.041, and then there are places where it gets lower, and I think the low ones might be in here somewhere, and then there's some, the higher ones tend to, the bigger or higher height of fret where there's not as much, hasn't been as much taken off over the years, they're higher, that would be this range, and then they go lower again, but not lower in the sense of necessarily of the fret height being lower in this range, but there's relief built into the fret, into the neck itself, and maybe that was done before the frets were put on, so I don't think, I don't have my book with me, but I have all the numbers, and they don't suddenly get, the frets are not worn away or, you know, very, very low in height off the fretboard in this area. It's just that when you put a straight edge on it, these ones appear to be lower relative to the straight edge. That's not saying that the frets have been sanded down more in this area. I think, in fact, that they tend to be higher, the frets in general, tend to be higher off the fretboard in all of this area compared to, say, the low down here. So I don't have a lot of material to take off before I'll have to replace the frets down in this area. So I want to be very careful down in this area, but I still had to do it. I think I've explained that sufficiently. Now, when I lay this on, you're not going to see it maybe, I don't know, but I've got my strings still on the guitar, just hanging loose because I couldn't work on the fretboard with the strings on there. I could do very little, in fact, with the strings strung up. And when I take the strings off, then the neck tends to spring back away down. The head tends to spring down because the strings pull it up a little bit because they're attached to the soundboard, and they're, when they're under tension, they pull up on the head, pull it this way, which tends to pull it up because it has an the string has an angle over the nut that gives it some leverage to pull it up. So when I took the strings off, it was almost flat, and I just had to turn the truss rod very slightly. And I'm not even sure that I've turned it far enough because, as I said, there was reverse relief or a bump on one side and relief on the other, so I didn't want to go too far with it, and because then I'd be removing too much from the side with the bump, maybe. I just want to do what I can. So at this point, you know, once you remove material, it's never going to be coming back. So I want to be very judicious or careful, conservative. So now I've got, I think you might be able to see a little bit. There's a curve on that. That's my 16-inch radius. I can see it, 16-inch radius. And now if you it probably says 16-inch radius right on it. Okay. If I put that on there, I can see it. And maybe, I think you can too. But I can't see it because my eyes don't quite reach that far. And the light is poor here. Well, I can see it very roughly conforms to the shape. If my edge were flat, it would rock like that. You know, I mean, it would be, that's a lot of rocking of the card back and forth on the fret. Now, if I put it the correct way around, that doesn't rock. It does, but it only rocks because the frets are rounded on or at the very edge. In fact, it's not rocking now. Not, well, a little bit. But maybe it's because the card has slipped off the fret here. Sure doesn't rock much. So it's a very close Yeah, that doesn't rock at all. I'm trying to rock it, but it's not rocking. It fits perfectly. And I can check all these frets that they're all the same. I don't know how I achieved that because I didn't. The only way that it's achieved is by checking continually to make sure that you're. But really, I didn't have to do any adjusting. When I did the sanding, it naturally kept the right shape, or else I was doing the sanding in all the right places or whatever, but without knowing it. But whatever the profile was before, afterward it was the right profile. So I wasn't really checking it much beforehand because I didn't really need to know much about the shape of it beforehand. What I needed to do was be able to check when I'm done that I have the right profile on each fret, which is the curved 16-inch radius, which is a 32-inch diameter curve. So a 32-inch circle is what they used as the basis for a circle that would be 32 inches diameter coming up and the top of it being the frets themselves. Yeah. So when you put the masking tape on, which is what I'm doing now, or what I did yesterday, the last thing I did was put the masking tape on because it's because I want to protect the frets. I'm going to have to round over each fret along, you know, so that it's has a round profile and flat, just only flat at the very top. So, but I don't want the masking tape. The thing about the masking tape, I don't want it to get touching the varnish on the side of the guitar. I want it to be loose, not folded over. See, that's wrong. There we go. It was touching. It was folded over. That was wrong. I just want it to be loose so that if you see from the side, it's not folded onto the neck. It just sticks straight out. That's what I want, so that I don't damage the varnish on the guitar, the finish. Okay, I'm going to get back to work on this now. I'm going to be checking it to see how flat it is and doing any final adjustments on the fret height.
Let's see. I want to show what I can here about the neck. You see, see the shiny areas in the middle of the frets, and I don't want to touch the tape and peel it, but in the middle here, they're shiny. And then there's some red. The red is where there's been no material removed because I put magic marker everywhere on all the frets before I did the sanding, or the leveling, in other words. So I leveled it, but I didn't really have to remove anything. I'm checking these red spots with a straight edge. I don't want to drop my guitar here, but yeah, now I can do it. If I run the straight edge along the whole length of the neck, or 12 inches of it with a 12-inch straight edge, as the case may be, and I can check it with both longer and shorter straight edges, I find that the red, even though it hasn't been removed, nothing's been removed there, it's not much low. In fact, it looks like it's being touched. Very, very little clearance between the straight edge and the red. So there's really not much reason to remove it because it does give a bit of relief in the middle. And I've had to remove some here because there was a high spot. But it really gives relief here for the string to vibrate, which is, and this, the 12th fret, which is somewhere in this range, is the very middle of the string where the string in its fundamental mode vibrates and has its highest deflection rate in the middle of the string. So this is where you want to have relief. And I find there's a little relief, the relief begins at the 12th fret. So that's perfect
because that's where the maximum string deflection occurs in the fundamental vibrational mode of the string, which is the dominant mode, and the other modes are harmonics that are existing, coexisting simultaneously with the fundamental frequency of the string. So it vibrates, and the other mode, the second or first harmonic, I should say, the second mode would have a node at that point, so it wouldn't require any relief because it's not vibrating or not moving at that point. The third one, again, would have a deflection at that point. But the primary one with the maximum deflection at this point is the fundamental of the vibration of the string. And now I don't have really any clearance at the 12th fret on the treble side. Sure, this is the bass side. This is the treble side because I'm holding the guitar upside down. So I have a maximum deflection here, and I have the beginning of my relief here. So that's perfect. But I'm not sure yet if when I loosen my truss rod again, I'm going to gain any more relief in this area, and whether it's going to be sufficient to account for humidity changes, adjusting for that or not. So I didn't want to tighten the truss rod too much, though, because I didn't want to. I had a bump here. If I tightened it more, I was going to have more to remove. So it's a matter of thousandths of an inch here. We want to remove only a very few thousandths from wherever, and so that's been done. Now I'm ready to do some more thorough measurements. I want to measure my fret heights all over again and see how much I've removed from each fret and what they, and of course, the measurements are not very accurate, unfortunately. So I've actually been finding that the frets, I've measured them after I've removed material and found them to be higher than they were before. So that's the uncertainty of the measurement. But I've definitely got a little higher, more fret, in other words, a little bit higher fret on the bass side where I didn't remove any material. I think I didn't really observe that before in my primary measurement, but I don't think I've removed more than 3 or 4 thousandths of an inch, I think, from the, at least at a maximum, of the frets I've removed, where I have removed any material. I think the maximum of any one fret that was removed is about of that order, and that's about the thickness of a sheet of paper. And I had to do that to get it down to flat material again, where there was no dent in the fret, no wear spot. So that's it.